British Spy Stories. Season 3. Official Denial. Episode 2. Gabby drops the clutch and opens up the engine of the Land Rover Defender outside of her flat in Berlin. Laravel sits next to her, looking at a map of the route they'll be taking to get to Hungary, and Hans lays across the back seat, asleep.
"Easy enough, ma'am,"
says Laravel.
"Down to Dresden, on to Prague, touch on Slovakia, past Bratislava, then we're in Budapest."
"How long will it take?"
8 or 9 hours, ma'am."
"Jenny, you can call me Gabby unless we're on a live op."
"Yes, ma'am."
Laravel looks at her and screws up her nose, and they both laugh. Gabby turns the SUV out of the street, and they head east. It's dark by the time they turn off the motorway near central Budapest. They navigate through the roads and finally turn into Sondi Street, then down the ramp beneath the Radisson Blue Becker Hotel. After checking in, they agree to meet in the bar of the hotel to plan for the next day. Hans is the first to arrive and orders whiskey. Laravel walks up to him within 5 minutes.
"Do you miss being in the army, Gordon?"
"Sometimes."
"Why'd you leave?"
"Didn't like war," he says. "I'd only been out of training a couple of years. Went to Basra."
"Weren't you scared?"
He turns to her.
"No, Jenny, I wasn't. We were trained to defend ourselves."
Laravel takes a large swig of wine as Gabby walks up to them. They go to the hotel restaurant and sit down at a table with a view over the gardens outside. After the meal is finished, they have coffee, and Gabby turns the conversation to the job in hand.
"Tomorrow,"
she begins,
"we are going to have a session with a spook from the embassy to give us a briefing on what MI6 operations there are in the country. They'll come to the hotel."
"Who is it?"
"Don't know yet.
Now Hans has put together a profile of our target, and from now on we'll use his code name. Redwick."
Hans pulls out his phone and finds his notes.
"Redwick is ex-Russian military," he begins. "He was key to the Crimea invasion in 2014. And before that, in every key military operation they've had in the last 30 years. Syria, the Chechens, Georgia, even Tajikistan back in the 90s. He had a reputation as a hard man and didn't treat his troops well. But apparently he got respect because of his ability to eventually win in battle. He left the army 5 years ago and continued with a lot of the black market activity that he was already part of. He grew his operation up from a local one to a regional one, and now the biggest in Europe."
Gordon goes through more detail about Redwick, then asks if there are any questions.
"Has he got any weaknesses?"
says Laravel.
"You know, like routines he does every day that we can use?"
"He likes his drink, but that's not unusual, as we know from people who've been in the armed services. He's never been married and has prostitutes shipped in to him, wherever he is. Again, not unusual. There are no other obvious weaknesses."
"Maybe we can use those somehow,"
says Gabby. And she drinks the last dregs from her coffee cup. A ray of sunshine glints off the bonnet of the Audi A5. And makes Nadia Koval drop the sun visor to shield her eyes. She turns off Frankel-Leo Street, on the west bank of the Danube in Budapest, and into the underground car park beneath her flat. The lift up from the lower ground floor opens near her front door, and she turns the key. Taras isn't home, so she makes coffee and goes to sit on the balcony overlooking the park in front of their apartment. Nadia pulls her blonde hair out of the tie and lets it fall over her shoulders. She watches the people on the grass, talking and walking. She's always loved this part of the city, since her father brought her here when she was a girl. Budapest is her city, the place where she was born and has lived for most of her life, apart from university, when her mother and father had insisted on her going to Bonn to study English. Her parents had experienced more of the Soviet way of life in Hungary before perestroika and had wanted her to see more of the West. But she hadn't been that impressed. She met a boy in her first term at Bonn,
who was rich, and they had driven and flown all over Europe, sometimes on a whim, only deciding at the last moment where they would go. He had taken her to New York and London, and they had stayed in the best hotels. When they'd split up in her final year, she missed the glamour that his money had given her. But then she'd met Taras in a bar back here in Budapest. And he had the sort of wealth that could give her the lifestyle she wanted, full of parties and travel. Her parents had complained that Taras was bad for her, but she'd ignored them. The sound of the front door opening then slamming pulls her out of her thoughts. Taras walks out to her on the balcony. He is tall with bright green eyes and beautifully cut dark hair.
"Hello, darling."
He kisses her on the lips.
"I wasn't expecting you this early."
"That meeting finished early. Well, I got what I wanted. There was no point staying."
"Is coffee made?"
He walks back into the flat, then reappears 5 minutes later, changed out of his suit and in jeans.
"What was it about?"
she says.
"The meeting."
"Do you really want to know?"
"Hmm?"
"My contacts have got introduction to a guy handling shipments going out east," he says. "We're planning some redistribution."
She smiles weakly. He never talks about his activities unless she asks, even though she knows that Taras deals with some violent and corrupt men. He always protects her from the worst of it. She knew from the start that he was involved with criminals. When he had talked about his childhood and how poor he'd been, she knew that there had to be an explanation of why he was rich and only in his 30s.
"When's that happening?"
she says.
"Not sure yet. Next week, probably. There's no security to speak of anywhere around the warehouses. Once the containers arrive, no one's tracking them."
"Who'd you sell to?"
"Everyone wants military equipment these days," is all he says.
She has already moved on with her thoughts.
"I wanted to eat out tonight. I booked us a table at La Pelle Noire,"
she says. It is silent in the empty conference room on the third floor of the hotel. Dust in the air catches the pale sunlight that pours in from the day outside. Suddenly the door at the far end bursts open, and Major Nicholas Warren walks in. He has dark brown hair cut short, and brown eyes that take in the surroundings. He takes off his coat, rolls it up, and lays it on one of the side tables, then adjusts some of the chairs around the table. He has his back to the door when it opens behind him.
"Are you from the embassy?"
says Gabby. And he turns. The two of them say nothing at first, but their eyes link.
"Hello, Nick,"
she says.
"Gabby, they didn't tell me it was you."
"I'm top secret."
She widens her eyes.
"You're laid in Millport?"
"Yep. We can make this work, can't we?"
"Fine by me."
They say nothing more, and she moves to look out of the window. After a minute, Hans and Laravel arrive, and introductions are made. They pour coffees from a jug and sit at the table, but Gabby remains standing. Nick stands up, but Gabby starts to speak before he has a chance to say anything.
"Agent Oxwood has come over to brief us."
He looks momentarily frustrated, but in less than a second, the look has disappeared.
"I'm going to tell you about our live ops in the region," he begins. "I'm the MI6 station chief here in Budapest, but I cover Romania too. Cutbacks, you know. Mostly, we are tracking migration and arms movements in the region, as that gives us good intelligence about the illegal activity going on. We had a covert operation in the last couple of weeks, which was the destruction of a port used by black market gangs. I haven't been fully briefed, as it was run from London due to its sensitivity. But we do know it was MI6 resources who carried it out."
Gabby and Hans exchange emotionless glances. Oxwood continues to talk to them about how MI6 are working with the Hungarian Intelligence Agency, the AH, to support counterintelligence and organized crime. After an hour, the sun has imperceptibly risen and casts a moving target across the tables in the room.
"Any questions?"
he says, as he finishes his briefing. You haven't mentioned about how we'll work together, says Hans. Your team and us.
All ARP decisions must go through my unit. That's not correct, Nick, she says. We're self-determined.
But operating in a context, says Nick.
We'll tell you what we're doing just before we do it, she says. You have my guarantee of 3 hours' notice. Anything else will undermine the way we work.
We can't have a rogue unit operating in an EU member state. His voice rises. I know you like doing it your way, Gabby, but we're managing the day-to-day relationship here.
She stands against the wall. Her eyes 1,000 degrees. We need you to give us local intel, Nick, but we will decide what we do. I think you know that Millport is official denial status. That way the PM and Westminster can deny our activities. And you can be honest about how much you knew. We're patently not going to undermine your operation. You just need to keep us across what you're planning. We'll do the rest.
He sighs. We'll need to talk more.
That's the deal, Nick. Thank you for the briefing. Hans here is your team's contact point for the intel.
I'm going to have to flag this back to London. She says nothing, but her eyes speak for her. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. He nods to Gabby. Agent Blackhawk, he says. Then he leaves. After Nick has gone, an awkward silence descends on the conference room, and Hans is the first one to brave the cold air.
Want to tell us something, Gab? He says.
I just wanted to make it clear.
Her voice is still giving away her emotion.
They don't control our work. I'm the MI6 field officer in charge of this op.
You sound spiky, says Hans. Has there been some sort of silly bollocks about who calls the shots?
Not from my perspective, she says. Oxford is our liaison point, not our control centre. We'll be a self-contained command and operation team. Because we're on official denial status.
Are we going to get the intel? Says Hans. Or will Oxford be difficult?
He'll be okay. You know the guy? Says Laravel.
Gabby pauses for a second, aware of the eyes watching her.
Yes, I know him. Who is he? We worked together a few years ago.
There's something else, says Hans. Behind your eyes. Come on, we're all trained in interrogation. You can't hide it from us.
There's a pause, and the others wait for her.
We had a thing once, she says. This guy's an ex of yours, says Laravel. Long forgotten. Why are you only telling us this now? I only knew it was him a minute before you did. Did you dump him? Says Laravel. Does it matter? Yes, it does. I did, says Gabby. Now let's move on from my personal life to what we're being paid to do in this country.
It only takes 10 minutes from Nadia's flat to the Hid Bistro, near the western end of the Margate Bridge, over the water. Here they serve her favourite brunch. Elena is already at the table when she arrives, flicking through her phone. Like Nadia, the woman is tall and groomed. They air kiss, then order eggs Florentine and coffee.
How's Taris? He's busy. Always doing some new deal, you know. What does he actually do?
Says Elena. The two friends only met 3 weeks ago, but immediately got on. Nadia never tells people that Taris is involved in the black market. In her fictional world, he runs an import-export business, bringing in goods from the East and the West and selling them on. This is true, in part, and she reassures herself that not all of his cargoes are illegal.
He runs his own company. Imports stuff, you know,
she says. But her friend can sense insecurity in her voice.
I'd like to see him sometime.
Elena's eyes flash up from her food to look at her breakfast companion.
We should get the boys together. Victor needs company. How's his cancer?
Says Nadia.
I don't know what to say. He lives with it.
Elena looks wistful.
How did you guys meet?
Says Nadia.
We both worked in Ukraine for the government,
says Elena.
I was the manager of the admin team, and he worked in some weird backroom analysis job. I never did find out what it was, but he was cagey about it. I think he was more important than he says. When did you come to Budapest? Last month. He got a medical payoff. He was desperate to go, couldn't stand everyone looking at him with the same look in their eyes, you know? A poor guy sort of look. And you came with him, Elena. I love him. What can I say? My sort of work is easy to get. I got something within 2 weeks here. What's he going to do?
Says Nadia.
Try and survive.
Nadia reaches out to her friend and holds her hand. The woman takes a mouthful of coffee and tries not to look sad, but fails.
We'll arrange something for us and the boys,
says Nadia.
Taras needs to meet more people. He spends too much time with his business contacts. Can he find a job for Victor? Something small. Something to keep his mind off his treatment. I'll ask him,
says Nadia. In her mind, however, she can't help wondering if Elena is a bit too interested in trying to find out about Taras's business. She needs to be careful about what she tells this woman and find out more about her and her boyfriend, Victor.